horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From rainy upstate New York. Very good Thursday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. And at our website, stevepick.com. I'm not sure why you need to hear this, but that's never stopped me before. I'm leaving for Philadelphia after the show, and we'll do the show tomorrow from Parks for the first time. And that, of course, comes in advance of a absolutely dynamite Pennsylvania Derby, Cotillion, Turf Monster, Gallant Bob, etc. card. So I'm doing four things at once, of course, looking at today's stuff and getting the show organized, but also packing. And you would think after years and years and years of being a veteran traveler, business traveler, and you would think I wouldn't blindly reach into my dob kit for anything where there's a razor. Jesus. So you look down and, oh, yeah, good job. This never used to be, frankly, this never used to be an issue. Like I told you the other day about, I'm like Chuck Wepner now, for those of you that are old enough to remember the Bayonne Bleeder. you can, when you're a sports star, right? This is what a crazy direction. When you're a sports star, you want to have one of those nicknames that, stands the test of time, right? The Splendid Splinter, right? Ted Williams, huh? Jolting Joe, DiMaggio, Crazy Legs, Elroy Hirsch. The Bayonne Bleeder. How? I mean, what? am I right? As they say, am I right? I can pull a Zito. Right or wrong? Right or wrong? The Bayonne Bleeder. How'd you like to have that for a nickname? Chuck Whip. You know what? You pays your money. You take your chances. You have no idea what is going to come out of his mouth next. Oh, my God. We should have a fun day. I don't see why not. I'm just thinking. No, I got home. Wow. I got home. Today's Thursday. Let me pull this together. I got home Tuesday night, right? Yes. Wednesday. I was here yesterday. This is the danger when you go off on the kind of sojourn we did, that you just get punchy. In fact, that reminds me of a, I don't know if I've ever told you this. There was a certain point in the business career, that I traveled. And I mean traveled. Not far off from what the last 2 weeks entailed, but literally, city to city to city, meeting, and that kind of thing. And I can remember, and this is before. I'm pretty sure that this had to be before cell phones. Of course, it was before cell phones, and the 90s probably. Probably when I was working for Damon. And my father tracked me down somewhere. And the hotel phone, you remember when you actually used a hotel phone? When was the last time any of us picked up a hotel phone? I've been in hotel rooms lately where there isn't even a I haven't even noticed the phone in the hotel room. My father tracked me down somewhere, and so the phone rings, and I answer it. Hello. And it's my father, and he starts to talk to me. No, you could. Yeah, maybe it was in advance of a holiday. Who the hell knows? And I remember stopping him. And I said, "Pop, hold up a minute," because he was calling me in a hotel room. And I said, "Where am I?" He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Where am I? Where are you calling me?" I don't remember where it was, but that's a distinct memory. Not knowing where I was. I've got a bunch of those. I remember being in Cincinnati. In fact, this hotel is closed now. This hotel is empty. What was that? What was it called? Now I can't even remember. Not like the Cincinnatian, which has been remodeled actually. But I was in for a proctor for a P&G thing. So I must have been working in either Charlotte or Kansas City. And this is very funny. And I bet you there's some people, some that have had business careers that can identify with this, that this may have happened to. I remember waking up in a panic, and you would think that I would have, looked at the clock. I don't know. All I know is I jumped out of bed, jumped in the shower, got dressed, thought I was late for whatever, at Proctor, you couldn't be late for anything. And I remember walking into the lobby of the hotel, taking the elevator down, and I got my briefcase. And looking around and realize, and it's dark out. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I don't know how or why I hadn't looked at either my watch or the clock radio or whatever. But I thought it was, I thought it was 7 o'clock or whatever. And I don't even know if maybe I was sleepwalking. I don't know. I don't know. That's another. I'm sure there's a few of you that are listening and saying, you know what, very similar. let's see what's going on today. What do we have? All right, it's Thursday, which means, of course, we'll talk to Tony, and I can't obligate Tony to come out to the track tomorrow. And really, tomorrow, it is weekend preview tomorrow, so we'll spend obviously a lot of time against the Pennsylvania Derby Cotillion card. But we'll talk to Tony today, and get out in front of things. David Hill. We'll talk to David. 2-3 last week. David took a little bit of a dent, but he's actually in picking some very tight games. It's pretty funny that it seems like he's zeroing in on games that are really narrow. So far with us, 3-1 week one, 2-3. So he's still out ahead of it. So 5-4 going into week three. And who's playing tonight? Packers tonight? Who's the? This Amazon situation, by the way, I haven't seen people complaining. Although I did see a funny tweet. Somebody tweeted about they took some image, and it basically said, me trying to explain to my father how to find the Thursday night football game. on Amazon Prime. It made me laugh. We'll see if Dave's... I've not read his column yet, so I'll pull it up in the Times. There's some fairly interesting other things to read in the New York Times this morning. So let's see. What do we got tonight? Who was it? Steelers-Browns? Ooh, Steelers-Browns. All right, well... I hope all the bridges are blocked off in and around Cleveland. as if it's not tough enough to historically be a Browns fan. David Hill with this week's National Football League coverage. We got to get to Rich Eng today. We've got to get to Rich. And I actually was writing earlier this morning, and then I got distracted. And I'm writing a little blurb for the back cover of Rich's book. And, of course, the new edition coming. We're inching closer, and it's going to be just in time for Christmas gift giving. Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, second edition, all new and improved. So Rich Eng later, we got to check in with Rich, and of course there is, we should mention, you've got a pick six, and good old-fashioned $2 pick six carryover today at Los Alamitos. We got another weekend before the scene shifts back to Santa Anita. But Los Al with a modest pick six carryover, but it's the real thing. It's the, you know, the old fashioned $2 version. It starts in race three at 5:05. You got a 30,000 maiden claimer for 2 year old fillies. There's eight of them. There's a 6 horse maiden 50 going short. These are both short. You've got first level allowance going 5.5 as the third leg. Fourth leg is a cowbred maiden special. These are all 6 horse fields, 6 by 6 by 6 by 6. Then it turns to 7 and 7. So 6 by 6 by 6 by 6 by 7 by 7. First level allowance is the feature. Seven of them going a mile, and then cowbred maiden 50s, 2 year olds going 6. So probably I've got the quick sheet, but haven't looked at it at the fields. Have looked a little at Remington tomorrow, and tomorrow at Remington we'll talk with Dale Day. I'm waiting to get a confirmation from Dale, from Double D, and we'll look at the stakes card. They've got three stakes tomorrow, and kind of spread around, actually. The Turf Sprint is fairly early on the card. So, in fact, Dale is, as we speak, Dale is confirming, and I'm just looking. So look for Dale at about, he's good after 10 o'clock. So we'll look for Dale probably about 10:30 Eastern time. All right? How's that? So Dale Day, you're looking at the Remington Turf Sprint, goes as the third tomorrow night. Then the Bob Berry Memorial is the sixth, and the nightcap is the Red Earth for the Oklahoma Breds. In fact, all three of these are Oklahoma Breds. Nice card, and the racing has been really good at Remington. So we're going to catch up. It's been a few weeks. We'll catch up with Dale and look ahead to tomorrow night. Action starts at 8:07 Eastern time with a 2-year-old open company 1 mile maiden special for the 2-year-old girls, where Carl Brobert offers up the 5-2 favorite viewing trail. Diodoro with what looks to be the second choice. Asmussen as well. Ginger Moon, third choice. Terry Off has got a nice one. CT Trout, of course. In fact, Off has got a pair. One is 5-1, one is 10-1. So got some pedigree work in there. Nice card tomorrow. The late second half includes a pick four, 10 by 10 by 9 by 12. So field size, excellent. All right. So Tony, Dale Day. Oh, Paul McGee. Paul McGee is going to join us in just about 10 minutes, give or take. All right. I've been wanting to get a hold of Paul after the terrific win for Samantha, Sam Siegel. And that may have been, there were a lot of good races over the weekend. That may have been the most exciting finish of the day, right? That miles ahead, winning the Thoroughbred Society Sprint. A nice win for Martin Garcia. McPeak's busy at the sale, so no talking to Kenny until next week, it looks like. Yeah, this is the McPeak wheelhouse. books 5 and 6. Speaking of which, let's slip in the results from yesterday. And 200,000, the numbers are coming down as they're supposed to. And between the pinhookers and the nature of the catalog and the way things, you get thinner, the pedigree's not as stake laden, of course. But yesterday, a $220,000 Violence and a $200,000 Army Mule. So, as it happens, the conversation with John Sakura the other day, very timely. And Peter O'Callaghan offered up, Woods Edge offered up the session topper, HIP 3181, James Zoller bringing that one home. And Denali offered up the Army Mule Colt that the Conrads, Manfred and Penny Conrad, of course, from Canada. So I'm going to guess that ultimately this Army Mule Colt will end up in the barn of Mark Cassie. The interesting filly, and what's funny is, I'm saying the pedigrees thin out. Not all the pedigrees thin out. But when you find a hip like 3132 in book 5, it sort of is a hint about, maybe a physical scenario. Bay Philly by Uncle Mo out of Life is Sweet. Yeah. And she was the top Philly purchase of the day. She went to Mathiasen Racing for $170,000. Now, that ordinarily you wouldn't think, okay. Well, that pedigree. So, something, right? You would imagine that there's a little, maybe small, maybe, might have a flaw, something in the confirmation, etc. But, certainly, frankly, with that page, how wrong can you go? Ultimately, desirable as a broodmare prospect. So, and they might surprise you. We're all in trouble when I'm like this. When I say those words, I might surprise you. Who last night was spinning the dial and came across Lonesome Dove on some cable? I'm not sure which of the movie channels ran Lonesome Dove Complete. And Tina was spinning the dial, and the guide is going up the blah, 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 blah. I said stop. And I dragged her into watching the last basically 3 hours, about the last 3 hours, at least, 2.5-3 hours of Lonesome Dove. And of course that scene where Gus, Gus has survived the initial attack of the Indians, which of course the only reason he got attacked by the Indians is because he wanted to chase the buffalo, and old U finds him, and he says they're gonna walk to Mile City, and I don't think you're going too far, Augustus McRae, and I might surprise you. It is, let me tell you something. For those of you that aren't aware, there is not. I know, there's certainly any number of fabulous Westerns, but there is not a serial style. There is not something that elaborate and long. What is it, 10 hours, probably? 10 hours? Is that about right? there's nothing. There's just nothing better. It's just it'll stand the test of time too. It'll be something you'll watch the rest of your life. I mean, I'll watch it. I how many more times? And Tina was getting mad because I'm literally doing the dialogue along with everybody. It doesn't matter if it's Gus or Woodrow or PI. It does not matter. If you haven't read the McMurtry books, I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But pick up the McMurtry. I don't know if you should start with the book, because the sequel, the second installment, takes some turns. But it's so just unbelievable. Blue Duck. I guess that old woman didn't teach you to fly after all. Just great. So God knows how we're going to get through these 3 hours with me like this. All right, we've got three more sessions of Horse Sale today, tomorrow, and Saturday. And you just don't know. You just don't know what you're going to find in these. There's stars. There's grade one winners. Gold in Nemdar Hills. I was just trying to get through the territory without getting scalped. You ride with an outlaw, you die with an outlaw. I think, Case, I think we better reach for... Tony gave me a thumbs up, so Tony's good for later. All right. Oh, and we've got to slip in. Who was on last week? Was it was Joe Clancy last week, right? So, I think we had Joe last week. So, Sean or... Actually, Tom Law will be at Philadelphia tomorrow. There'll be a handful. Tim Wilkins going to be there. Tom, of course, is handling all the publicity as well, in addition to Chris Griffin, of course. All right? So, all right. Casey, let me give you this. And by the way, as I look at what I wrote Casey early this morning, I didn't get Casey the listings for the show yesterday, so we were late getting. I'm sorry, we didn't get the pods up from yesterday, so you can now access them. Oh, really? With those titles or without? Oh, good for you, Case. Good job. I did not see the notice. I was asleep by my God. It was Tina. Tina's the one who said. We have to go to sleep early. Okay. I mean, I was groggy. Thanks to everybody, by the way, who is loving the pictures of Lennon and Callum. Had such a fun visit with them on Tuesday afternoon after I left Erie and stopped in Rochester, Honey O Falls, which is where the kids now live. Which actually is very convenient. It's much better than going up into Rochester. They used to live in Irondequoit. And Webster over the years. And so now they're very close to the thruway, much closer to the thruway. Victor, those layers of towns, for those of you that know the Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse, Utica corridor. And I know it, I can give you a Route 20, the old Boston Post Road, or thruway over the years from trips to Colgate and back and forth. I've been tromping these byways a long time. this is going to go down as one of the crazier mornings. Paul McGee is joining us and not going to miss an opportunity to bring in Marty's brother, who Marty, you got to admire Marty doing the high wire act on Saturday. He specifically, identified miles ahead, made it the best bet of the day. And then, Paul, you went out there and sent off Martin Garcia and Samantha Siegel's competitive edge to a thrilling win. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Steve. That was a heck of a race, wasn't it? The horse that ran third got beat a nose for all of it. So it was a heck of a finish.
It really was. We're talking about the Louisville Thoroughbred Society Sprint, and I spent the day with Amos, and it's funny. He upsets the Iroquois, and then he had the favorite in this spot. And that horse ran, a courageous race, but got swamped late. Talk a little bit about miles ahead and where you are with him.
Well, there's no question he's an afternoon glory. We've all had the morning glories that we can't stand, but this horse, he knows when it's game day, that's for sure. And he showed that the other day. He was very gritty down the stretch. He is 12 for 25 now. So that tells you right there that he's got game when it comes race day. But he's a funny horse in that his routine gallops. If he had his way, he wouldn't even go around there. He's just so lackadaisical and he goes around there with those reins just dangling, and he could care less about his routine gallops. But race day, he is a different horse, that's for sure. He's just very, very competitive.
Paul, talk about this for a second, because that is the opposite. We hear much more often about morning glories, horses that give every sign in the morning of being a good horse, and then for whatever reason in the afternoon, whether they get intimidated or they get they panic, something gets to them, and they just don't display the same tenacity or ability in the afternoon. How do you keep a horse like this that isn't that interested in the morning effort? How do you keep him fit? How do you get him race ready?
Well, I do find myself breezing him in company, because the times that I breezed him by himself, he'll go a half in 53 or 54. That's just the way he is. And he doesn't get much out of his routine gallops either. So, I've found myself breezing him in company. I line him up a buddy just to get those competitive juices flowing and keep him fit that way with 101s, 102s. He'll do that in company, but I'm sure if I went 5/8 with him by himself, it would be a 105, 106.
Well, here he is. He's a five-year-old. He's a gelding, and always happy for Samantha Siegel, who puts so much into the game and really enjoys it. Always happy for Samantha to have a success. And this is a horse that is interesting because he's kind of been all over the place too. Talk about the way he's been handled, and that's his first win of late for you.
Right. Well, yeah, Samantha bought the horse, and when Brian Corner ran him out at San Anita, he just really threw craps. He just he was fourth of four, and Brian called me and he said, "Paul, something about this horse. He just does not like San Anita." Brian said he had kind of a bad attitude out there and like that. So lucky for me, Samantha decided to send the horse to me here at Churchill, and I'm not going to say he has thrived because of what I said. As far like his routine gallops, it's not like he's going around there with his neck bowed and just loving life. But I do think it's safe to say he likes the Churchill surface, more than he liked the Santa Anita surface. So, but I just kind of let him do his things. We don't push him to go any more than he wants to go and that kind of thing. He's happy to go around there, but he just wants to go around there at his own pace. But on race day, he's got game, that's for sure.
Yeah, this is interesting, too. And I'd love to hear Samantha's story, because this was a horse that one of Eddie Plyce's, well-known clients originally bought as a two-year-old in training, and that's the Elman, Mellon combination that Eddie has a hand in. And he's always been a productive horse, and he's also a horse that has obviously stayed sound as well, and seems to thrive just with racing to make 25 starts at this point in his five-year-old year. And he's got a series and a sustained series of 90 type buyer performances, and of course the Gulfstream successes, both in the Smile as a three-year-old and then in the Gulfstream Park Sprint this past February. And this seems like an unusual, I can't remember if Samantha has bought a lot of ready-made horses like this over the years, Paul.
No, it was a little unusual for her to do that, and I agree. It kind of threw me for a loop when she sent me the horse, and I looked up his PPs. I'm thinking, this is not a Samantha Siegel horse, but it is. So, but yeah, and I have to think. I don't want to put words in Eddie Plyce's mouth, but in my mind anyway, I'm thinking that's why he was eligible for the claiming crown and things like that.
Right.
Because of the way he trains in the morning. I'm sure that, Eddie Plyce is probably breezing in, and he's going a half in 53, and he's thinking, well, I'm going to run this horse for a tag. So, but obviously he did a lot of winning for Eddie as well, but went right up the ladder. I mean, Eddie ran him for a tag, and then, some of those starter races and this and that, and he's just thrived. But again, I have to think it was a similar scenario for Eddie in that, he's not showing him much in the mornings. But he got his picture taken with him plenty of times, that's for sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He's a competitive edge. He's out of an awesome again mare, Jenny R., that was bred by Nick Lotz and Betsy Kelly originally. And, was a $175,000 purchase, which for a competitive edge, that was at OBS March as a two-year-old, and he was a $120,000 Keeneland Yearling. It looks like about book four.
Right.
This was a horse that had potential, and it's cool, to see him. Is this a new Bet on Sunshine? Is my question.
I hope. I can only hope. Yeah.
Paul, he actually, if you look at this, I should pull up Sunshine's set of PPs. He does feel like a horse that, has got plenty of mileage on the tires. He's a horse that likes to win.
Yeah, and he's a very sound horse. I wish all the horses in my barn, I wish their legs felt like his. I mean, he's just rock solid, knock on wood. And I think there's better things to come for him looking forward, certainly.
Well, and for those that don't remember, the Bet Big Gelding that won 22 of 47 races in his career for just under $1.5 million for Paul. And
he was Hickory. He won a stake as a 9-year-old Bet on Sunshine did. So hopefully miles ahead will be similar.
Well, that came, and that was what? That was the Phoenix?
No, he won the Aristides at Churchill as a 9-year-old. Bet on Sunshine did.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Amazing. My story with him, it came when came in that 2000 Breeders' Cup, when I was approaching the sprint, and I was building everything around Honest Lady, and off of the crazy fast workout that she had put up, and Bobby Frankel running her in the Breeders' Cup, and it had that effort in the Atto Mile. And so when I was trying to figure out who am I going to use in here, And I, you know, looking, Paul, at other Breeders' Cups, I went back on the sprints, and all of a sudden, you know, there it is from 3 years earlier when you would run him in the Breeders' Cup sprint, and he was third. And I put that all together, and I said, I think you got to use Bet on Sunshine in here. And he runs third in a second. I mean, if you asked people to name a horse that, you know, ran third in Breeders' Cup races 3 years apart, actually 4 years apart, they couldn't do it.
Yeah. He was something else, that's for sure. Yeah, Calvin Burrell, he typical Calvin fashion, he came screaming through the rail at the quarter pole that day and was a bang up third. I think he only got beat three quarters of a length for all of it.
Pretty much. And I mean, for those that have never seen it, it's a tremendous. It's one of my favorites, not just because I cashed High, Wide, and Handsome, but Kona Gold ascended. It was his fourth Breeders' Cup. He had been fourth, third, second, and then finally wins one with Alex Solis.
Right.
It was Alex's first Breeders' Cup win. Honest Lady was tremendous under DeSormo to be second at 31-1. Bet on Sunshine, third, 20-1. And to give everybody an idea of how great this field was, Caller One was fourth, More Than Ready was fifth, Dream Supreme, Successful Appeal, Trippy, Delaware Township, Shadowcaster, Five Star Day was last. I mean, this was
right,
the real thing.
Yeah.
14 horses hell bent.
Right.
And the try was only $2,076, and that was just
pretty sweet.
It was very sweet, and you know, for years, there, when you're up in Churchill, and the door's locked now, but for many years, you know, there's when you come out of the parlay and you take the stairs up to go to the observation stands for out of the media, you know, where the media now is. There's a room, Paul, that has a ton of big framed composite win photos, and there's actually one in there of, oh my gosh, your big turf horse that won the Dixie and the Woodford.
Honor and War.
There you go. There were all these win photos that must have hung somewhere in the building, and it was when they were doing all kinds of renovation. And so I would go in there and I'd just look through those pictures, and I thinking, gosh, what are they going to do with these at some point? I can't remember if it was a Bet on Sunshine or I'm pretty sure it was Honor and War, and it made me think of that. Right, he won the Dixie. You won the Dixie him, right?
He won the Woodford Reserve. He won the Woodford Reserve and several other graded stakes on the grass. He was a good turf horse.
Huh.
He ran him in the million. He won the Arlington Prep for the million, and then he got beat in the million. But yeah, he was really a nice horse.
I don't know why I was thinking that. Was there?
No, he
didn't win the Dixie with somebody else?
No, I did not win the Dixie.
Huh. We can't call it the Dixie anymore. The dinner party. Excuse me. Let me reorient. anyway, I'm in this kind of mood. I could go in any direction the way things are going today. Let's talk about what's ahead. Where does Miles Ahead go next?
Well, I'm going to talk to Samantha about maybe the Breeders' Cup Sprint, but I must say we're leaning against it. We'll probably wait on something at the Churchill Fall Meet is most likely.
should ask, too, about Martin Garcia's part in this, too, and because he gave you a terrific ride. I mean, he waited just the right time.
Yeah, he did. He threaded the needle there inside the eighth pole, and I thought Martin rode an excellent race. Yeah, it looked like he was going to go inside for a minute, inside of Isolate, and then he ended up going between horses, and I think that probably got his competitive juices going just that much more. But, Martin, I feel like he rode a really good race that day.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. You would not – it was his first time aboard, and the occasion to draft him. And part of it was because Joe was up – Joe Talamo would have had the call, but he was up at Toronto.
Yes, right. He rode Ivar in the million-dollar race up there at Woodbine that day. That's why Joe wasn't on him.
Well, Martin had a big smile on his face. I mean, he was beaming. You could tell what it meant to him.
Yeah, right.
I love it. Well, this is going to be fun. And always, like I say, always happy for Samantha Siegel and for you. And, of course, you made, Marty tabbed you and made you the best bet. In fact, I will tell everybody, I should take a picture of this. Kenny Peck played hard his best bet. That was in, the Philly and Mare race. And Sweep, I'm not sure who was doing the Sweep picks for the DRF, but Bell's the One was Sweep's best bet. And Marty made Miles Ahead his best bet. So all three cappers made their best bets work on Saturday.
Yeah,
it was a fun day.
For the pick three. Yeah.
There you go. I love it. Well, let's also talk about another nice client and that maiden win yesterday, the Silverton Hill.
Yeah, that colt, he ran a huge race yesterday. He got away bad and still won. So that was very impressive. But, yeah, I've got a few nice horses for the Hamiltons, Silverton Hill Farm. I've got a couple of homebreds for them, and then that horse yesterday must be the money. That was a purchase that they made at Keeneland. They bought him as a yearling and sent him to me. But, he's been a nice horse all along. He showed some good breezes. I think that's why he only paid five-something yesterday. They knocked him down to 3-2 late. And so somebody was betting on him. But he did show fast breezes. He showed some minute flats. And a 47 and change from the gate most recently. So I guess the clockers were putting him out or something. But, he's really a nice colt. He's got a great disposition. He was real classy in the paddock yesterday for his debut. And it really surprised me that he got away like that because he had shown good speed in his morning breezes. So, and Edgar Morales mentioned that in the paddock. He said, I think we're going to be on or close to the lead with the way he's been breaking from the gate. And then you look up and he's 12th coming out of there. So go figure. But the way he made up ground, Edgar did a good job with him. He just let him settle early on and gather himself. And then you could see at the 3/8 pole that he was coming with a good run and wore him down. So, yeah, very, very impressive.
Well, and he ends up winning clear. He wins by a full length in the end. So it feels like he should stretch out. He's by Painter. He's out of a Congrats Mare and the powerhouse breeding partnership of Fred Hertrick and my man John Fielding. And they breed a good horse. And you see their name, now it's... Now it's a decade plus of success, and so must be the money absolutely signifying some upside. I should also note you are the second, at least the second, maybe even third guest trainer this week that has been reaching for Edgar Morales, and Tom Amos talked about it on Monday. Paul, he's not going to be a secret much longer.
No, Edgar, I've ridden him quite a bit over the last few years, and I feel like he's a very underrated rider.
Yep.
I know he had a big summer at Indiana this year, mostly because of Tom. I know Tom was riding him on a lot of horses. And you can bet that with Tom riding him now pretty regularly, that his numbers and stats should go up. But, yeah, he's a real good young rider, patient, can finish on a horse. So, yeah, like you said, I think good things to come for Edgar, we hope.
Well, I'm just trying to get you a figure here, and for some reason, I don't know why this would not. There we go. I was on the wrong. 68 buyer. That's a nice spot on the ladder to start out.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I think it's safe to say we'll definitely stretch him out for his next start. Like you said, that breeding suggests going longer, so that should do nothing but help him. So hopefully we'll go up from a 68 buyer in his next start.
Well, and you can't beat this scenario. This is one of those conditional maiden races, Paul, where it's for horses that sold or are in aid for $50,000 or less. So, okay, it is restricted company, but 68 buyers are going to win their share of maiden specials at Churchill. And this was a horse, actually, that they paid exactly $50,000 for. So he absolutely, I won't say they wrote this for, that Ben wrote it for you, but it certainly fit the bill.
Yeah, he got in just at the right number, didn't he?
Big time.
Yeah, one more bid and he would have become ineligible for the race.
Exactly, so. Right. Exactly right. Well, the one to watch for must be the money yesterday. And, you know, you're not famous for having two-year-olds ready to fire either, and yet the public...
Tell me about it. That's... Tell me about it. Yeah. I couldn't even win with Bet on Sunshine first time out. What does
That's
that tell
funny.
You?
That's funny. And now you're going to make me look and see, you know, Marty's always in a tough spot with you. He didn't pick you, but Kenny Peck did.
Okay. All right. Well, Kenny,
that's funny.
Looked up my first-time starter stats. So.
You were 0 for 10 with two-year-olds coming into this over the last 18 months. So we're not looking 0 for 12, actually. And so, yeah, it's not necessarily 0 for 12 first starts and 0 for 10 with two-year-olds. But it's such a misnomer, Paul. The other day we were at Presque Isle on Monday, and there was a horse that Ryan Walsh had that won at 13-1 that, you know, had given all kinds of signs that she was a runner, and yet his numbers with firsters, he's much better with second-timers. And you know, trainers are creatures of habit, and so, you know, just getting one and getting it ready and giving it some time to, you know, just mature and get a good experience – you know, that counts for a lot, and that's the way you bring horses along, so be it.
Right. Yeah, and I feel like I do, in fact, go in with my my first time starters with that kind of a mindset, thinking, well, a race will do them some good, they'll learn something, get some dirt kicked in their face, and that kind of thing. So, you know, we're all a little bit different, but yeah. Some guys just like to point them for their debut wins, and I just don't do it that way. Simply, so
yeah.
You know, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. But that horse yesterday, he overcame my bad stats and won anyway. won in spite of me. So
I love it. Well, as we speak, one Marty McGee just texted me that he can't do the show tomorrow, so I'll disappoint everybody, but Marty is going to be available. You will see him tomorrow at Belterra. He's doing a seminar at Belterra tomorrow.
Wow, okay, all right.
I love it. and then maybe let's see. I should really check and see. I don't know. I think Marty has written off the Red Legs for 2022, but there's plenty to do in the Natty that Marty can a short drive to the precinct and all kinds of things, right?
Yeah, right.
I love it. Talk about, let's round the conversation out. Paul McGee is with us off of the stake win in the Louisville Thoroughbred Society, a thriller with Miles Ahead, breaking some hearts, notably that of Amos. And then yesterday, the maiden firster that must be the money wins. And let's look ahead to Saturday, the Bourbon Trail Stakes, $275,000, Big Blue Line. And you're calling on Martin Garcia, trying to go 2 for 2.
Yeah, he's really a nice colt. When he won that allowance race at Churchill in the spring, you know, he proved himself to be a good horse. He beat a good field that day. And then he disappointed me in his two stakes races, the Iowa, the Prairie Meadows race. He kind of took all the worst of it that day. He got a bunch of dirt kicked in his face all the way around there. They kind of had him pinned in along the rail. That's that race that Conagher set all the pace in there. And we were following Conagher all the way around there, and my horse came back with dirt just covering him. Like I said, I just think he kind of took all the worst of it. He was in a pocket all the way around there. So I kind of threw that race out. And then he ran pretty good in the St. Louis Derby. He loomed up there turning for home like he might win. But that the Kenny McPeak horse that won was real impressive. He was a big favorite that night and just beat us. But I'm hoping that Saturday night, you know, we're back on our home track, a track that he has proven that he likes. And he's had a couple of really good breezes. And he's another horse that he has the right demeanor and the right attitude. He's a real classy horse. He won't, that Saturday night racing, he won't, that won't bother him one bit. He's got class and he'll take all that in just fine. I'm not worried about that. So, but I'm looking for a good race for him. He's got the outside post, 1.36 miles, and I'm feeling lucky with Martin Garcia right now. So,
This is interesting for a number of reasons. For those that hadn't looked ahead, obviously the action at Parks is dominating conversation and attention. However, the Dogwood on Saturday and some supporting action, including this three-year-old event that has drawn some serious horses, including, you mentioned McPeak, here's Creative Minister, that ends up in here, who's kept good company all summer long, all through the spring. How about Gilded Age from Mott coming out of the Travers? He was 35-1, but he got the last minor award. Ethereal Road, who D-Wayne has tried everything with, going to be very familiar to people. There's Homebrew for Brad Cox in the Wests, and this is a horse that, you know, won the Pegasus and didn't like the slop. In fact, his two worst efforts have both come in the slop. The Smarty Jones at Oaklawn and in that West Virginia Derby, absolutely nowhere. Otherwise, he's only won or been second in all his other starts. And St. Tappet turns up here. Kind of wondered where this horse had disappeared to. St. Tappet, this is the Tappet out of Havre de Grace. For Mandy Pope and Pletcher. This is serious. And that St. Louis Derby runner-up for Jerry Namy and Phil Sims' war campaign. So this is a, that's not even everybody. There's also Maximum Impact for Norm Cash. How about Norm Cash with that horse that's run 20 times already this year?
Yeah, that was a big win for that horse yesterday. I was happy for him. You know, you like seeing those old hard campaigners. That's another horse that he obviously has game day spirit. Yeah,
we're going to get to that story. I earmarked that last night as I was going through. It's he's won He's won 11 times. In fact, Marty sent out a missive about it. That's how I even noticed it yesterday. Well, the Bourbon Trail, 1 3/16, the Preakness distance, goes as the 10th race on Saturday night, 10:42 post. And this is a Maryland bred, notably. And another modest purchase for the Hamiltons, $25,000 as a short yearling. And he's an Atreides out of an Archmare. And you obviously thought that this was a horse that was going to like a route of ground, Paul, because you tried him in that mile and an eighth allowance back in June, and he responded.
Right. Well, I think Atreides, he just hadn't lit the world on fire as a sire, and I'm sure that's why they got him for the price that they got him for. But, yeah, he's a son of Medaglia d'Oro, Atreides is. So that's why I stretched this horse out, and winning at a mile and an eighth bodes well for being able to win at a mile and 3/16, in my opinion. So we're looking for good things for him Saturday night.
Well, Big Blue Line is the horse we're talking about. He's 2 for 2 at Churchill. That goes a long way as well. The horses that love it, and a very nice group. One of the other horses that I didn't mention in this Bourbon Trail Stakes, Phil Bauer sends out Mr. Rigney's Warrior Johnny, and right now, Phil Bauer, you gotta bet on Phil Bauer with asbestos gloves.
Yeah, Phil had a big summer. I think he won six races, I believe, at Saratoga this year.
Yep.
And then he won the stake the other day at Churchill. So, yeah, Phil's got a hot hand right now.
Well, so do you. Let's call it like we see it. And already two wins from five starters and a third at the Young and Brief meet. And how many more are you going to run before Keelan?
I'm going to run another four or five, it looks like. I put a filly in for Sunday, and then I've got a few more before the end of the meet. So hopefully we'll win a few more before Keeneland starts. But, yeah, I do point a lot of my horses for the Churchill meet because it's home for me. It's where my horses are stabled. And, you know, if I'm leaning one way or another, whether to run a horse out of town or just wait on Churchill, oftentimes I find myself just waiting on Churchill with horses. So it's paid off for me in past years, and it paid off for me again this meet, it looks like.
Well, and not done. How many more two-year-olds do you have to start yet?
I've got a few more. I've got a Motown two-year-old for Samantha that has been must be the money's workmate, but he's a little shin sore right now, so he'll probably be he might debut at either Keeneland or the Churchill Fall Meet. He'll probably be the Churchill Fall Meet, but he hung in there in all of his breezes with Must Be the Money, so I think he's a pretty nice horse. And then I've got an Oscar Performance for the Ammermans that was a real good fourth in his debut at Kentucky Downs, and I'm pointing him for a turf race at Keeneland. So I think he's a nice colt. His name's Berrettini. A homebred of the Ammermans. Oscar Performance out of a graded stakes winning mare. So hopefully you'll see him at Keeneland. The problem with Keeneland is getting these two-year-olds in on the grass because they only write one and only one maiden race for the two-year-olds. They do one for the fillies and one for the colts. So it's going to be a challenge to get two-year-olds in on the grass.
Well, and of course, the situation, we'll have to wait and see what happens with the turf course at Churchill for November, and if it's going to be ready. Certainly looks, I mean, if you look at it, it looks like it's coming along. So we'll see if they, you know, if they give it the green light, literally. The Berrettini.
Yeah, it's finally green. At least it went through that stage there for a month or two where it was just brown and dead and looked horrible. But now, as we speak, I can say that it is green and plush. So hopefully it'll be ready for the fall meet.
Well, that counts for something. Green's the right direction.
Right. Yes.
Well, everything pointing in the right direction for the Paul McGee Barn. What's the name of that Motown cult?
Mo Hope.
Mo Hope. Cute.
Mo Hope, yes.
Well, and of course, Sam had the big, oh my gosh, what was his name with Hope?
Hope Rises.
Hope Rises. But also, she had a cult, right? You know who I mean. Strong Hope.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, that's the Richard Mandela horse that she has out there. Yes, right.
Strong Hope. There you go. Well, you know, I'm a little addled upstairs, Paul. But certain things come flashing across like a
right.
You know,
I know the feeling. Yes.
Like a comet. Well, a terrific couple of days and weekend for Paul McGee, and always want to take the opportunity to shine the spotlight your way. Paul, well done, and good luck this weekend.
Steve, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Paul McGee, everybody, and Team McGee. And there's the far-flung, all the McGees and one of the great families around the game, and tied closely for long period of time with the JMS racing team. And I tell you what, you want to have three nice clients: Samantha Siegel, the Ammermans, and the Hamiltons, Silverton Hill. You know, if you had to hand pick, three people committed to the sport to train for and who are loyal and steadfast, there's countless, obviously there's countless owners that would qualify under those conditions, but boy, not so bad. Silverton Hill, Hammerman Racing, JMS, Paul McGee. That was fun. Kept finding more to talk about. Berrettini, if you want to follow Berrettini, who was out of an Equiano mare that the Ammermans brought to North America, I think. I think that horse was, yeah. Yeah, Bacciami Piccola. Appropriately, she ran in Italy. That's great. She ran in, wow. She broke her maiden in Milan, which I don't think I can count on. I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen Milan in PPs. Wow. And then ran at Vichy before coming and winning the Florida Oaks in 2016. How about that, right? You remember this? I vaguely remember this horse now. And in fact, let's pull this up. As you can tell, it's not taking much to send me careening off the road. Julian Leperu aboard, 14-1, paid $31 ahead of Enjoy Yourself, who was 11-2 herself for John Terranova, and the Gatsis family, the great one, Proctor, was third with Family Meeting. Boy, this was big balloons. Holy cow. And then Princess was fourth. That was Ben Colebrook. How about these mutuals? $280 exacta, $2. $1,200 try, a $12,000 superfecta. Who was favored in this? Ava's Kitten. Didn't she just have, the baby win the other day, right? Was that the, I've got to look, Ava's Kitten just had a winner the other day. And of course the Ramseys, we had that nice conversation yesterday with Safi. Let's see this as we go to the break. I'm so easily distracted. That's what this game will do to you. Oh, I take, well, no, I guess not, maybe not. Maybe it was a sibling. Parents Pride is the three-year-old, and she's got a good magic. She's got a good magic. Maybe this one sold, actually, at the sale. Maybe I saw it in the catalog. That could be. Anyway. Back after this, Tony Black.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up.